Meditation easy, or was it? It's your experience, right? So I leave it to that. But tonight, what I would like to explain is what Buddhist explanation on the worlds we live in. According to Buddhist analysis, we live in three worlds. One is Sataloka, that means the world of the beings, including us human beings. And then Okasaloka, that means the actual universe or universes that we live in. And then Sankhara Loka, formations, including mental formations. And these are the worlds that we live in. And within this world that we live in, that things are happening. So we somehow, as Buddhists, try to contemplate on these things and try to fit our existence into these worlds and why things are happening there. So Buddha never asked us to follow his words. But he asked us to investigate his words. And if it is agreeable to you, no harm to yourself, no harm to others, bring welfare and benefits to yourself and to others, then he encourages you to practice. It's like a bottle of medicine. You can read the prescription on the label 1,000 times, but if you don't take it, you will never get benefit. So he showed us the way. Whether we walk or not is our problem. So, you know, of course, with compassion, kindness, and urgency, he encourages us to practice. But even in Buddhist countries, their majority is still chasing after rainbows, and then only a few percentage are practicing, but that is not the point. The point is, it is for the seekers who seek will find, and then their eyes will be opened, and then they will practice. So the worlds I've just described, due to the existence of these worlds, that things are happening, isn't it? As a Sataloka, this world of the beings that we are in. As human beings, isn't it? Just because we become human beings and problem solved, that's it. You know, it doesn't work that way, isn't it? As human beings, we have our requirements as human beings. We have to have, in those days, the rivers that are fertile, and then the plains that have plenty of grass and fruit and animals to hunt, isn't it? And then these are the requirements. Why? Why do we need these rivers and plains and fruit trees and things like that, birds and animals, isn't it? As a human being, we have a mouth that needs to eat to fill the stomach. That's the reality of beings, not only human beings, isn't it? Every being have to have this existence to require to eat. And now, later on, they have to have this community for security. And then when it's cold, something to put on the body, whether it's a animal skin or what, isn't it? And then when it rain, when it's cold, thunderstorms, they need caves like that, isn't it? Human being needs these things. These are the requirements. Nowadays, we have these transport systems or cars we need to drive, mobile phones we need to communicate with, computers, houses to live. We need to have a work. Before we get a work, we have to study and prepare for it. These are requirements as this, human beings in this human beings world, Sataloka, isn't it? And then, it doesn't stop there, isn't it? Okay, we have our mobile phones now, computers now, houses now, cars now. It doesn't happen that way. There are earthquakes and tsunamis and storms and, weather changes and hot and cold. This, the world, the cosmic world, the universe that we live in, the planet that we live in, all these things happen, isn't it? One moment you are happily holidaying on a beach, and next moment the tsunami wipes you out, isn't it? And then whose fault is it? Let's try and find fault, you know, isn't it? Is somebody trying to, you know, do us, punish us that you're on the beach now, okay, I'm going to trigger the tsunami and there you go, kaput. You know, you deserve this, isn't it? This is the cosmic world that we live in, isn't it? These tectonic plates are pushing each other for thousands of years, maybe, I don't know. One day one has to give up and it's like that, and then, you know, trip all these underground tremor and, you know, shock waves and this and that created tsunami, isn't it? And that what happens? Nobody's fault. No one's fault. You are in the wrong time at the wrong spot. There you go. Isn't it? Pompeii, the whole city buried under the volcano. Is that volcano been watching these people in Pompeii? Pompeians, is it you would call them? yeah. So, people in Pompeii and the volcano's watching them, and one day the volcano, you know, didn't like what it sees, isn't it? All the corruptions and cheating each other and hatred and people fighting, and then volcano decided to explode it and kill all these people, isn't it? It doesn't work that way. This is the cosmic world. The universe that we live in, the planet, the characteristic of planet, isn't it? It happens. Nothing to do with the emotions or desire, or nobody is punishing us. The world we live in, as it is, like that. So now this requirements of the existence as human beings or birds or dogs or, you know, deer or anything, you know, beings need all these requirements, and all these physical world we live in have all these characteristics. On top of that is Sankara Loka, these formations, the mind, isn't it? The mind that is, as you have seen in your meditation, so restless, so hard to control, you know, so natural process, isn't it? Its own natural process. So when we have this mental formations coming up, isn't it? Based on this physical body, isn't it? Right? From this physical body, what can, you know, we have, isn't it? We can have from this physical body, we can have emotions and feelings, isn't it? We can have perceptions. We can have mental formations. We can have consciousness out of this body, the body. So these five groups, isn't it? Why do the body produce these things? Because the eyes that can see, oh, it's beautiful flower, or it's dog poo. When you see the beautiful flower, you like it. Oh, so beautiful. When you see the dog poo, yuck, you don't like it. Where does this come from? From this eye that has this consciousness, sight consciousness. And through that sight consciousness, you have this, you know, feeling and emotions after determining that this is a beautiful rose, you're so happy you like it, so fragrant. You see a dog poo, you reject it, isn't it? So that's where it's happening, from this mind formations. And then perceptions, isn't it? From this perception, it makes you, I like it or I don't like it. The perception that these roses are so beautiful and so fragrant, that perception creates, and then you like it. And the perception of seeing that, you know, an unwholesome one on the ground, isn't it? Then you don't like it. So that's where the mind is. Mental formations are making our mind like, dislike. That's where it's coming from. On top of this, requirements of human beings existing as human beings or beings, and then this, you know, the physical world that we live in with all these characteristics, you know, of its nature, and the mind formations, mental formations coming out of this physical body, isn't it? When these three worlds, when they combine like that, and if we can't see it, if our eyes are dusty, can't see it, then we say, my goodness, I'm being hurt, you know, I don't like this, you know, I like that. isn't it? Then at that stage, these are natural states, right? I'm not saying they are good or they are bad. We are trying to see as they are, not finding fault, not feeling guilty, but trying to see things as they are. And when we try and see things as they are, that's what we find. When we see the beautiful rose so fragrant, we like it. When we see the dog poo, we don't like it. That's the natural action and reaction, or the true nature, true characteristic of the mind, mental formations, coming from these mental formations. So what are the sources, isn't it? Somebody said, you know, you got a big nose, and then you got big ears too, you got pimples all over your face. You're so ugly, you know, like the back of a bus. But I'm deaf, right? I'm deaf. So whatever that person saying, I can't hear it, I'm smiling at him, and I say, hello, how are you? You know, would you like a drink? Feeling so nice inside. Why is that happens? Because the source is not there. When I'm not deaf, when I hear it, natural mind act and react, and I'm very angry. Or when they praise me, I'm very happy. So where is the source? Is the source the words or the hearing? Isn't it? It's hearing, the source. And then comes the interpretation through perceptions and mental formations. You make judgment, you make conclusions, and you decided whether you will like it or not like it. You get angry or you get happy, right? The source is hearing. And where that hearing comes from? Another source. Ear, isn't it? Ear. So somebody's making funny faces to me, poking this and that, but I'm blind. I can't see it. No matter what they do, rude gesture, do as much as they like, I can't see, I don't feel anything. But when I see, yes, oh, it's, you know, insulting, I'm angry. Where is the soul? Seeing, sight consciousness, isn't it? The eye. So all our lives, what we've been doing as human beings is hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking. From the ear that can hear, eyes that can see, nose that can smell, tongue that can taste, body that can feel, and the mind that can think, the brain that can think. That's all we're doing all our lives, nothing more, nothing less, isn't it? And from that seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking, we have happiness and unhappiness. So if you look at it, you know, the mind that is restless is attracted to these things and act in a natural way as well, not with wisdom, isn't it? But when you practice meditation and when we see things as they are, you have this wisdom of the how the mind behaves, the characteristic of the restless mind in, you know, comparison to the mind that is now trained, calm, peaceful, and have wisdom. It's a totally two different things, isn't it? So that part, after the many practice, you come to see the mind in meditation, how restless it is, how hard it is to control, how easy it is to let it go unrestrained, uncontrolled, act naturally, get angry, you know, jump up and down with joy. We can do that. But after seeing this, when we see somebody or when we hear somebody, you know, saying, you know, words that we don't agree with or we don't like it, the wisdom kicks in. The mind that is restless, the mind that cannot see the nature of the mind, how it works, still blind in that ignorance, isn't it? We can see it straight away. So it's like, are we going to get angry then? A dog comes and bites us, are we going to bite the dog back? Isn't it? We see straight away how that mind is, you know, forming and restless and can't see, and then, you know, going unrestrained like that. So we use our wisdom, and then we don't retaliate hate with hatred. Buddha said, amongst the hateful, we dwell on hating. That's the exact words of the Buddha. Why do we dwell on hating among the hateful people, isn't it? Because we see that that's where the coming from the mind that is restless. Mind is the forerunner. What's formulating the mind, you know, it comes out as words and actions. So we can see that. So seeing that, instead of getting angry, we give attention, wise attention to the roots of the things. Why does that person get angry? What have we, you know, done in the past to make it angry? What is the need of that person? Not to confront now, to investigate and to understand. From that, to solve their problem or to help if we can, isn't it? That's why in Buddhism, we don't do things out of anger, out of foolishness, or out of hatred. That's a principle of Buddhism. Doesn't mean that we are punching back though, right? We have the many ways to protect ourselves. But we don't have hatred, anger, and delusion, isn't it? For example, you know, there in Afghanistan, the tallest Buddha carved out of the natural mountain, Bamiyan Buddha, the Taliban blew it up. You don't see or hear Buddhists all over the world putting placards and demonstrating, because they understand that's a mind coming from so much hatred and anger. Can't see, as Buddha said, led by the desire, blinded by the ignorance. So with compassion, we wish they could see. We wish they could see, but they will see eventually, if not this generation, generations that will come. Because once we're all living in the caves, put it that way, we're all eating each other, isn't it? Then we civilize, isn't it? We come to a point where we can, you know, see things more in reality. Then we adapt ourselves, we change ourselves, isn't it? So it also applies to the, you know, mother-in-law that is so mean to you, isn't it? Or even your own mother that is so difficult to handle, your own father, isn't it? It also applies to them. They're saying all these things, blah, 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 you know, only based on their emotions and feelings, only based on their needs. So narrow and so focused, they can't see other things anymore. And they are the righteous one. And what they're saying is the one that is correct, isn't it? So they'll keep on saying and saying and saying, you know, the rest is all, you know, no good. They are the only good ones. So if you understand this Buddhist teaching, you know, you're not going force to force. You're not confronting like that anymore. You understood that that mind is that much, you know, blind and, you know, so much ignorance inside, isn't it? Seeing this, then you can start being able to endure it or ignore it if you can't. Being your mother, you can't put her in a room and shut her up, isn't it? Go to your room, you can't do that, isn't it? So you say, Mom, okay, sit here, there, please, have a cup of tea or coffee, and here, some chocolates, you know, and this and that too. Leave them alone, whatever they come this year, go out of that year. Because it's your mother, you can't punish them, right? So that's the best way to deal. They treat them like at that stage, probably most of them are senile too, isn't it? They don't remember what they said, or, you know, if they go out of the house, they don't know how to get back, isn't it? So in that stage, ignore them. That's why meditation is also training for endurance, isn't it? You're sitting and then each day you really want to scratch it, isn't it? You refrain. You endure it, okay, the itch. Nothing is permanent, things are changing. With that, will that itch be permanently there? You know, now I'm meditating, it'll be itching, and when I get home, it'll be itching, itching, itching. Next year, it'll be itching too, isn't it? Then you have this understanding of changing nature of things. then you ignore it. When you ignore it, what is involved? Endurance. You have to endure it. Oh yeah, that flies, you know, especially in summer, walking on your nose. Now it's on your mouth there, it's flicking something, and keep going, going, going. Oh no, it's not going into my mouth. You close your mouth. You endure it. You don't do like that. This is the practice of meditation. The mind is so fragile and so restless. You're training this mind to be patient. You won't die because the fly, you know, walk on your face, or the itch there at the back, or you know, your joints are aching. You won't die. You just practice this endurance. So when your mother-in-law and when your mother saying those things, you smile and you have practice coming in, you know. When they're saying bad things about you, smile and go and make a favorite cup of theirs. If they like cup of tea or coffee, there you go, mom. There you go, mom-in-law, you know, whatever it is, isn't it? What they like. You know, see your mind at the same time. How is the mind acting? When you hear your mother-in-law's words, when you hear your mother's words, see how the mind, you want to just storm out of the house and, you know, never want to return again. Or with wisdom, you understand that it's the red mind so restless, living in that blind world, not seeing, isn't it, the reality of things. With that, we create compassion and kindness. And then, you know, equanimity means understanding that what do you expect from a person like that, isn't it? What do you expect from a two-year-old toddler? You expect that two-year-old little toddler sitting quietly and, you know, behaving well. If you're running all around and you have to chase, isn't it? Controlling all the time. Patience, another thing, isn't it? So endurance and patience, that's why we are practicing, isn't it? And then you don't practice, you hear Buddhist words and, oh yeah, that's very good. When time comes, we can practice it because we haven't got the practice in the first place. We're just only hearing words. So, you know, you have to practice. That's why Buddha encourages us to practice, to have this mindfulness established all the time. That's why he said, if you're making a kappa, know that you're making a kappa. You're turning the computer on, know that you're turning the computer on. You're punching the things in the computer, know that you're punching the things on the computer. You go to toilet, know you're going to toilet. You wake up, now your eyes open, know your eyes are open. To establish this awareness, habit of doing it every moment. That's the practice in everyday life, as well as in the meditation room. But once you go out, then your mindfulness is gone. That's why Buddha said, mindfulness at any time. Whatever you do, I'm driving now, you know, somebody cut in front of you, and suddenly notice, oh, my mind is really crooked now. I'm really angry. Note that. Note that. That's mindfulness. Then you don't go and put your two fingers out of the window, isn't it? So you refrain it because you have this mindfulness. And because of that, you don't have road rage. And only because of this mindfulness, then your compassion will come up. You slow down a bit so that that car can go in safely. And you don't push, you just keep a safe distance and let him know that you have no harm, intention of harm. Isn't it? It calms them down as well, isn't it? Where does it come from? Come from this mindfulness and wisdom combined with the practice of patience and endurance. So next time your mother-in-law says something bad to you, you smile and give her a big hug.
Yes.
Next time your mother says something to you so difficult to handle, go and give her a kiss. That's okay, mom, you know. What's a big problem? If you practice, that is. If not, that's a big problem. That's a big problem, isn't it? You know, you can apply in that sense the three monkeys, isn't it? Hear no evil, see no evil, do no evil. What your mother-in-law saying, you don't hear it. What your mother saying, you don't hear it, you don't see it, you don't do anything, but do good things, isn't it? So due to the time constraint, I'll offer this to you tonight. Hope you can make sense and contemplate on it and use it in your daily life. Please join us for a cup of tea or coffee if you wish afterwards. Thank you very much.
Thank you.